The top stories of 2014 in government and politics, a look back on the year in Indiana, plus our end of the year roundtable, winners, losers, memorable moments, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the year ending December 31, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, a look back on 2014, a year when elections took a backseat to issues in Indiana politics. But there was also scandal and controversy.
The year began quietly with Suzanne Crouch taking office as state auditor. She became the third Republican to hold that office over the course of a few months.
This vote means everything to me.
And then the fireworks began over gay marriage, first with a vote in the Indiana House that delayed plans for a constitutional ban.
Please turn toward each other and join hands.
And then with legalized gay marriage, sparked first by a federal court decision and eventually made permanent by an appeals court ruling.
I tweeted what will forever be known as the tweet heard round the world.
They were events that led gay marriage opponent Mike Delf to battle GOP leadership in a public fashion, a move that prompted punishment, including a state Senate seat next to the Democrats. The governor signed a bill to create the first state funding for pre-kindergarten vouchers, a pilot program.
I believe every Indiana child deserves to start kindergarten ready to learn.
And Mike Pence's travel schedule helped spur speculation that he is positioning himself to run for president. How else do you explain this speech in Berlin?
I believe we must take immediate steps to strengthen our mutual security by deploying a robust missile defense in all of Europe.
State Representative Eric Turner left office following an ethics investigation. He was accused of working behind the scenes to benefit a family business. Former state school superintendent Tony Bennett was fined $5,000 to make ethics charges against him go away.
He could not, without a policy, use state resources for political activity. That's what he did. That's a violation, and that's his admission.
And I will work tirelessly to protect Hoosiers from my
Despite the scandals on election night, Secretary of State Connie Lawson led a Republican sweep of statewide offices, and supermajorities in both houses of the General Assembly grew. At the close of the year, the governor's intention to expand the Healthy Indiana Plan is still awaiting federal approval, 7 months after its unveiling.
We're reforming Medicaid in Indiana.
Indianapolis can do better.
And Democrat Joe Hogsett emerged as the leading candidate for mayor of Indianapolis in 2015.
What was the biggest political story of 2014 in Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, what's your pick for top story?
Well, I'm going to disagree with your premise right off the top. I'm going to say that the election was the biggest story of this year, only because the Republican landslide and the ramifications of that over the next decade of what that means for public policy in Indiana is the biggest story coming out of 2014.
That's your answer.
Yep.
I have mine.
The biggest impact on public policy in Indiana over the next however many years is the governor's refusal to expand Medicaid and early childhood education. That's going to have the biggest impact on the state, not the election.
Well, I think the elections were important for one reason or the other. You could say the lack of participation was also a big issue in that. But I think education as an overarching issue was the biggest issue this year because of the implications with the Department of Education and the superintendent of schools that has been going on for years now, and the lack of any real movement in any of that as this year's gone forward.
I think it's almost by definition you have to say the election when you're talking about a big political
really?
Story.
I don't think so. I say gay marriage was the biggest story of the year.
But everything is in the context. I mean, everything manifests itself, and everything, the battle lines cross, arguably, at the ballot box. Now, as was said, this was notable. It's like the Time Person of the Year. It's not always the most laudable person. It's just the biggest impact. But I would say the anemic turnout, which was record-setting for all the wrong reasons. But then you did have these dramatic sweeps. Mike alluded to the Republican sweep at the statewide level, but then you had in Marion County and Indianapolis, you had just the opposite for Democrats.
How do you say that gay marriage wasn't the most dominant issue and didn't have the biggest impact on society?
Because it was here and it was dealt with and it's now behind us. What happened with the election, because of increasing the majorities in both houses, which almost impossible to increase supermajorities in both houses, means that they're going to be in play for over a decade, which is going to determine public policy in Indiana for 10 years.
And we still have 350,000 Hoosiers without health insurance, and we still have no mandatory kindergarten, and we still have nine to get into preschool that can't.
And we still have education issues that are unresolved, Jim. The gay marriage issue came and went. I think Mike makes a good point.
But it's also not either or. You had people who were challenged in the primary in two cases, I think, because of their stance on same-sex marriage issue, and that motivated some people to go to the polls. Other people might have stayed away because they felt they had accomplished what they wanted to accomplish. It all fits together and comes together, I would argue, at the election time.
No consensus there. All right, let's take another run at that. That was the big story was the question. What was the biggest issue? I say that was gay marriage.
I will give you gay marriage on that, yes, because it dominated the headlines for so long. I would give you the gay marriage issue.
Biggest clearly, issue. Same-sex marriage was the issue.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, I'll say that.
It's no fun to go from, that to consensus, but I'm afraid I have to agree.
Just to prove we can, unlike Congress, we can agree
on
something.
That's right, we can agree on something.
All right.
Unless you disagree.
No, I started out. Okay.
So you wanted that same answer for two questions.
I did. That's a lot.
Well, you need a little bit more,
Are you going to have the same answer for
all? Let's try this. What was the most significant court ruling of 2014, Mike?
Same-sex marriage.
All right.
You're three for three.
We have consensus again.
All
this
right.
is a happy
group. We got to get out of the mind of Jim here, don't we?
Well, I think this was a big deal. I really do.
It wasn't a big deal.
Okay,
so it wasn't the biggest deal.
All right, most influential judge.
Oh, that's Richard Young. He's the one who's determined the momentum for these issues.
There's one.
Loretta Rush, the first female Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Indiana.
I'm going to say this was the year of the Judge General. You had Brent Dixon, who stepped down from the top spot in the Indiana Supreme Court. Loretta Rush, first woman, as you point out. Mike also had some federal judges who were very much in the eye of the storm. Richard Young was one of them. John Tender is going to be stepping down from the bench here, a very distinguished career. A lot of people in very notable positions.
I think it's Judge Young, and in particular because of the way his opinion was written and the way it disposed of the issue, really.
I think it was Judge Young. Now, something different. The issue most likely to return, I say it's pre-kindergarten. And
how about daylight savings time?
I don't think that's coming back.
I think pre-kindergarten will come back, and kindergarten will come back.
I agree pre-K because we have a pilot program that's moving forward, and that is only going to grow, clearly. And the governor and this legislature are committed to making sure it grows, and it's a question of matter how much. And I think that'll be determined by the revenue forecast in the middle of April.
And if we accepted federal aid, it could have grown much faster and much sooner.
There's only one issue that you can guarantee will be on the agenda every single session, whether it's a budget year or not, and that is public education. In some fashion, the efforts to reform it, whether it's expanding the voucher program, the school choice, whether it's pre-K funding, whether it's textbook funding, it's some
pick
aspect
one.
Of
pick one.
I did public education reform.
All right.
Well, I think it is pre-K. And I do think the one issue that won't come back is the textbook funding that you were talking about. That's an issue that's been talked about for a long time, and it doesn't look like it's going to have any traction.
All right. Biggest mistake of 2014 in Indiana politics?
I clearly think it was Mike Dell tweeting from his caucus. I think that's just, I think it hurts his credibility inside his own caucus. It hurt him personally with his status inside that caucus and moving forward. And I think that was a mistake on his part. And if he had it to do over, he probably would have done it differently.
I'm sticking with my issue. The governor turning down $2 billion in federal funding to cover 350,000 Hoosiers who need health care.
Well, you're talking about, but he's still pursuing HIP 2.0.
Okay, sure. And we've lost a year.
Yeah.
Going on 2 years, we've lost.
So
okay.
You're saying,
and he's not bending, and he's not getting
anywhere.
You're
saying what he should do is expand traditional Medicaid.
Or give up on the co-pays, which is what the stumbling block is.
I'm going to go into the caucuses, too, but the one I'm going to is the House Republicans, and I think the biggest mistake was Representative Eric Turner's decision to lobby for his business interests in the privacy of the caucus, and there were key members of that caucus who didn't like what he did, and it ended up with ultimately a decision to leave the General Assembly.
I like and I agree with all of those answers, but I was being literal on this one as opposed to more figurative. And if you look at trying to quantify it and put dollars attached to it. Now, granted, you've got a multi-billion dollar impact, but a $29 million mistake that was identified at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles in terms of miscalculation of the excise taxes. And then on top of that, you then had too much refunding taking place.
It's supposed to give one answer.
It is. Yeah. It's the BMV problem.
One answer.
BMV accounting is big. All right. I'd say the biggest mistake was the pursuit of HJR3.
You are sticking with the same thing.
I think it was a big story. Yeah. Did I mention that? All right, best use.
You should explain what HDR3 for those.
Okay.
Same-sex marriage. Best use of social media.
Well, there you go. Freedom Indiana. Hands Away did the best job of mobilizing their forces through social media.
I think that's absolutely right. I think that was about as effective use of social media as ever been done in Indiana.
I agree, but since it's boring to say I agree, let's also say since Skype is social media, Senator Jim Banks sworn in from Afghanistan.
That's a good answer.
That's a good
technology, social media. I'm going to stick with HJR3 of Freedom Indiana.
I think that's a good answer. That's the best use of social media since the Obama campaign in Indiana. All right. Worst use of social media, Mike.
I've already given that answer. Thank you.
Mike Delf.
I think it was just wrong for him to do that. If he had to do over, he'd do it over. But, you know, that's just not the right time and the place.
But I think his mistake in that was more than that railing against the caucus by twittering. It was also naming churches in his district by name. It didn't hurt him because he took advantage of a national tide that swept him in barely as well. It's going to be a different ball of wax next time around.
He made two specific distinctive mistakes. First was tweeting information from inside the caucus, and then secondly was taking on the whole world on his views.
And that's not the first time he's done that. He is prone to using social media to vent, and sometimes when you're in the public eye, that's not the best use of social media.
If I had a ditto sign, I'd hold it up and say, I agree. That's Mike Delf's.
Not a problem with agreement. All right, the worst state house departure of 2014.
That's easy. That's Eric Turner. It was as ugly as it could possibly have been.
I'm going to disagree with you there.
He got reelected, by the way.
I don't care.
And then resigned. So.
I want to say the worst state house departure was Richard Murdoch,
who
left office early and went out the back door of the state house.
He did it for, retirement reasons, which were the wrong reasons.
Financial reasons.
Sure, he did it for his own personal retirement reasons, financial reasons, and I thought that was the wrong way to do it, and I thought it was the worst departure.
Well, and it certainly, as we discussed at the time with Richard Murdoch, that's proof, if you needed it, that he wasn't interested in seeking public office again, because it would be hard to come back and say, I really mean it this time, I do want to serve you throughout my term.
Well, and it also led to increased skepticism for the rest of the ticket. It didn't hurt it in the end, but it cast aspersion on it. So I think it was the worst departure as well.
All right, best political ad of 2014 in Indiana, Mike.
I liked Suzanne Crouch's red glasses campaign only because it set her apart. And symbolism has always been a good way to get people to know who you are. It's been done in Indiana politics a lot through the years. And this was a modern version of what Otis Bowen did a long time ago, and it worked.
Best ad.
Oh, I think Beth White's short ads were the best, the most clever. She made to do, she, you know, she made herself stand out with very little finances to do that.
Well, I think that's the thing. You know, it was a very clever ad, but she wasn't able to buy a lot of time and to pound the message home. I think both those ads were very good. In a year where there weren't very many ads at all to choose from, those were both very good ads.
Ditto again. Those are the only two, actually, I pretty much remember and stood out. It does prove that humor and is a good approach and does resonate.
Beth White lost.
Right.
Well,
but
you didn't ask what the results were. You asked about the ad.
I might be implied in the question, though.
Yeah.
I do think the Beth White ad was the best ad of the year. I really do, but whether or not it was effective,
I think it wasn't the question.
If this was determined by what we remember and what we will remember in a few years, say, oh, I remember that ad, then it rings the bell. Both of those ads do.
Worst ad.
Since there are only two, I'll take the Suzanne Crouch's red glasses ad.
There were other ads.
Not many.
I say there were some ads in a house race down in Green in Monroe County.
That's true. I couldn't tell whose ads those were.
Matt Ubelor, the Republican, and his Democratic opponent, and I thought they were a little too rough. What do you think?
I think the Beth White ad, too short, is the worst ad because she came up short.
Oh.
So one time I agree with her, short is better, and she came up short.
Oh.
Wow.
Everything else was eminently forgettable. There were a few sort of questionable ad buy. They weren't even ad buy. There were some spots on the web and so forth and some of the house races around Marion County that were a little odd, but nothing memorable.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Jim, on that house race. You know, Representative Ubelhor looked like he got panicked and rushed this out, and you couldn't even tell it was his ad until you saw the disclaimer at the very bottom at the end. And then his opponent tried to answer in kind, and, you know, just they were bad ads.
Bad ads with no positive foundation laid. All right, winning politician most likely to be challenged again, Mike.
Melanie Wright. The person who beat Jack Lutz in that legislative district. And it doesn't have anything to do with Melanie Wright. I don't really know Melanie Wright yet. But that is the most competitive legislative district in Indiana, and so certainly it will be the one that's more likely to be challenged.
House race, mostly in Madison County,
right?
Okay.
Mike Delf.
I think that's the answer.
Well, I think that's true, but that's 4 years down the road. Although I understand it's a question. I understand it's a question, but I think that's true, too.
Mike Delf, and you also, just to be clear, you didn't say they had to win in calendar year 2014, just a winning candidate. So I'm going to say Glenda Ritz, who has been challenged and will be challenged again and again and again as long as she is a Democratic elected education chief and there's a Republican.
I knew you'd have an answer.
Yeah.
All right, best campaign strategy, Ann.
Oh, I'd give that to Carly Macer and Christina Hale. They worked their fannies off in that campaign, and it showed, and they were able to withstand that tide. That was the best strategy.
I thought Kelly Mitchell turning down the opportunity to be appointed state treasurer before the election was a smart thing to do. I said so at the time, and I believe that because she wanted to go out and earn it, and she did.
I'm going to go back to the issue campaign we talked about a few rounds ago with the Equality Indiana. In the same-sex marriage campaign.
Freedom Indiana.
Yeah, I think the Freedom Indiana campaign was because they were able to organize and get the attention and to win in the legislature, but then also to win the legal argument. Not that they had a lot to do with that, and it was the lawyers, but still, it was
the public campaign, though, in terms of the people they showcased and put in the spotlight. Very effective, very smart use of resources.
I thought the best campaign strategy should go to the Indiana Republicans in general, who seem to see this wave election coming and laid low for the most part. Just kind of let it happen.
Just let it happen.
All right, biggest power play, Mike.
Well, I didn't really see one in Indiana specifically. I will say this.
You didn't see the governor when he said he wants to remove Glenda Ritz.
I did see one that affects Indiana, and that's the Obama administration trying to put the coal industry out of business, which has a tremendous effect on Indiana. Oh,
okay. Yeah, right. Obviously, it's the governor trying to make war on Glenda Ritz and hating the fact that she was elected with more votes than he got.
Well, and just to bring that down a little more specificity, I thought the decision at the legislative conference earlier this month to say that he will give up the
power play that he already did.
Yeah. Right, in order to try to pave the way for an appointed chairperson, which has always been the person who's the head of the superintendent of education.
But also takes off the table the idea of making an appointed position.
Right. It puts the appointed position on the table.
No.
For the head of the Board of Education, it takes off the table making state school superintendent appointed.
Right. Which everybody agrees probably ought to be done.
That was a pretty good play. I got to give them credit for that.
I agree.
Proving again that the biggest and most bare-knuckle politics are in education always. I'll say that's agree with everybody here.
Most effective leader in Indiana politics.
I give that to the two mayors, Mayor Henry and Goodnight of Fort Wayne and Kokomo, working hard in troubling times for communities that size and doing a pretty darn good job of getting their towns up and running again.
I think it's clear it's Governor Pence because he's got the agenda that he wanted and the legislature's gone along with it and they're on a roll.
Most effective leader.
Mike Pence certainly is where he wants to be in terms of his national image and profile, but also the caucus leadership. If you look at the last session where things could have gone off the rails in so many ways, with so many strong opinions in all the caucuses, they did. It was a pretty harmonious general assembly.
David Long is my choice, David.
Yeah, I think that's – yeah, I'll go with the caucus leadership, but I think David Long has the bigger challenge, and he's been able to be successful too.
Biggest policy advancement, Mike?
Well, I have two of them there. One would be the same-sex marriage, clearly. I think when you think about how far that came in such a short period of time, over about a two-year, three-year period,
right.
I mean, that's amazing to see something that big happen that rapidly. And so I would say that one. The other one, of course, is the advancement of pre-K.
Yeah, I was going to go with pre-K on this one.
For 300 students statewide? No, well, I'll go
it's
with
a start.
I'll go
it's
with
a breakthrough.
The
whole idea.
It's a breakthrough when we turn down the opportunity to do it for thousands.
What was your choice?
It's for gay marriage.
John. Way to clarify that, Jim. I think it's the same-sex marriage issue as well this year.
Yeah, if you look at where an issue started at the beginning of the calendar year and where it is now, I don't see anything coming close to that.
Most improved politician, Ann.
Oh, I'd give that to Joe Donnelly. I mean, he's everywhere. His staff is everywhere. I think they work 36 hours a day. Every event you go to, he's at. And then the passage of this legislation is a major accomplishment for somebody as new to the Senate body as he is.
Yeah, the Military Suicide Prevention Act you're talking about.
Well, this is kind of a backhanded category, complimentary-wise. but I will say this. I think Representative Tim Brown is the Ways and Means Chairman. Not that he wasn't a good politician before, but he is really growing into this job and providing some pretty valuable leadership, and he's open to people's ideas. And I think that's a major change in direction.
Most improved.
Well, this is an odd way to frame it. The caucus leaders, I'll go back to that, they were good leaders to begin with, but I think this really burnished their credentials and their challenges.
All of them? You're talking about Republicans.
It's tougher for Republicans because I've always said it's tougher when you have a supermajority. Yep. It's counterintuitive than it is when you're in the
Actually,
minority.
I say Scott Pileth's a candidate.
Yeah. Well, I think he's a very good candidate for that recognition. But I'm gonna choose another politician from Northern Indiana. I think Jackie Walorski surprised a lot of people this year. Her leadership on some key veterans issues played very well. She got a lot of a positive attention because of all of that. I'm going to give it to her this year.
Most embarrassing politician.
Well, I go back to the Richard Murdoch departure.
That's my answer.
Really set me off, and I'm sorry, I can't get over that one.
I had so many to choose from. You could have Charlie White. You could have Richard Murdoch. You could have Eric Turner. I mean, just name them. There's a lot of Republicans to choose from.
And you have so few to choose from.
I'll say Richard Murdoch also.
All of the above.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Our question this week remains, will Mike Pence be a candidate for president at this time next year? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, maybe. We'll have results on January 9th. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. All right, final roundtable choice for party of the year, and
Mike McDaniel's Christmas party.
And there you go. She wants Mike.
Republican party. Yeah. Clearly had the biggest win you could have.
It was a big year for Republicans.
That's a three-peat.
All right. Politician of the year in Indiana, Mike.
Mike Pence, 62% approval rating. His agenda's rolling through the legislature again, and he's clearly on a roll.
Oh, I happen to know one personally who's head and shoulders above all of them, and that's Ed Delaney.
Talk about politics.
Anything else? Yes, politician of the year.
I'm going to say David Long.
Oh, okay.
Good choice.
I'll go with Mike's answer. Mike Pence, I think, is poised for a lot of interesting things.
I think you got to go with Mike Pence.
I don't.
I think the majority here will. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.